Welcome to The Wrap, a Warren Averett podcast for business leaders designed to help you access vital business information and trends when you need it so you can listen, learn, and then get on with your day. Time is tight. That's why our advisors have wrapped up today's most timely topics into a podcast with actionable advice. Now, let's get down to business.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Kim. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Glad to be back for another podcast.
I am as well. And we're recording this on July 1st. It's crazy that half the year is already gone.
It is. These have been fun to record remotely, but I look forward to getting back in the studio with you soon.
Yeah, me too. And I'm really excited about today's episode. We are really fortunate to have one of our clients, Kyle Wade, who's the president and CEO of the Atlanta Community Food Bank. And Kyle joined the food bank originally as the vice president of partner operations. And then he was named CEO in 2015. You know, the Atlanta Community Food Bank distributes over 75 million pounds of food and grocery products every year. And they work with 700 partner organizations across all of Georgia. And so the food bank operation here in Atlanta is really a phenomenal thing if you ever get the chance to see it. And Kyle has just done an amazing job of taking over that role and leading. And we're really excited today to talk to him about what the food bank's role has been during this whole COVID-19 crisis. And we've all seen those long lines of people, you know, waiting in line to get food. And we know that many people have been hit really hard from this pandemic. And, you know, how grateful we are to have organizations like the Atlanta Community Food Bank in our community that can step up and really take over when the community is in crisis like it has been. So I'm very much looking forward to hearing from you today, Kyle. So thank you for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me, Kim and Paul, and really excited to spend some time with you all.
And we also have Megan Randolph with us, and Megan is a member in our out of our Birmingham office, and Megan leads our tax division, and she also specializes in the nonprofit and governmental tax area. And so I think Megan will be able to provide a perspective as well on how, you know, nonprofits in general have responded to the COVID-19 crisis and how it's impacted them and the work that they're doing in the community. So thanks, Megan, for being here as well.
Thanks for having me.
Guys, welcome. And we'll just go ahead and kind of jump right in. You know, Kyle, can you tell us a little bit more about your organization and your mission?
Sure, Paul. So the Atlanta Community Food Bank is one of the largest hunger relief organizations in the country. We support a network of, as Kim already mentioned, 700 partner organizations across 29 counties and Metro Atlanta and North Georgia. And those partners get food from us and then distribute it to people in need in their local communities. So it gives us a decentralized distribution network for getting food out to needy people. We distribute through that network every year, as Kim already mentioned, about 75 million pounds of food. That's the equivalent of some 63 million meals. Those numbers are increasing in light of the pandemic, which I know we'll talk about. But it's really a sort of a large scale food distribution network. Now, what's interesting is that our mission is to fight hunger by engaging, educating, and empowering the community. And what's interesting about that is that there's nothing in that mission statement that says anything about trucks or warehouses or logistics or distribution or even food for that matter. You know, that at our heart, we and our core, we are a community engagement organization. That even though we're kind of a big logistics operation, what makes us successful is our ability to partner with community-based organizations, volunteers, donors, to give them a platform on which they can make a difference in their community around the issue of hunger. And that engagement mentality, that partnership mentality, I think is fundamental, not only just to how we've always been, but it's been particularly important during this pandemic.
Yeah, and I think any of us who are active in the Metro Atlanta area know that that isn't just something you say, that the Atlanta Community Food Bank is a partner to many organizations. I mean, we see the tentacles of the food bank, you know, connecting all over the the area. And so I know that that is something that you practice what you preach, and we're grateful for that here in Atlanta. But, you know, Kyle, I don't think any of us could have possibly predicted at the turn of the new year that we would be going through the things that we've gone through halfway. You know, we're only halfway through this year, and it feels like we've gone through a decade's worth of large scale events. But, you know, how prepared do you feel like the food bank was to address a global pandemic? Not knowing that you could have predicted it, but, you know, how prepared were you?
So I think there are two answers to that question. The first is that we were, like everyone else, kind of totally unprepared. You know, I don't think any of us woke up on January 1st thinking that anything like what we've experienced was possible.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't think anybody was really and truly fully prepared for it. And so we've had to adapt just like everybody else has pretty quickly. Just given the enormity of the challenge. You know, I think the level of food insecurity in our community has increased by more than 40%, just given all of the layoffs and job losses. That's not something we were anticipating. The speed with which that happened was breathtaking. You know, the economy just stopped virtually overnight here in Georgia and around the country, and it just led to much higher levels of need really quickly. And that was the speed of that was not something we were prepared for. I don't think we were as aware of the different kind of cleaning and sanitation sort of procedures we would need to go through, and have had to get up to speed on that, to get you know, up to speed on what social distancing means. All of those things have been new and different. Now, the way I say, though, that there were two ways to answer that question, because the second side of that is that we were totally prepared. And what I mean by that is, you know, 3 years ago, our board and I were already talking about, you know, there's going to be at some point some shock to the system, mm-hmm. that much like the financial crisis of 2008 or 9/11 or the various crises that came before that, there's going to be something that creates a surge in demand that we have to be prepared for. We were in a facility that we had essentially maxed out its capacity in a very good economy. And so what we knew then 3 years ago is that we're gonna have to invest in our infrastructure and capacity if we're gonna meet such a surge in demand. And so we started then in 2017, planning a capital campaign, planning a new building, planning other investments in our infrastructure, planning investments in our network capacity, you know, the capacity of our partners, investments in our technology, and raised a bunch of money, built a new building where I'm sitting today that we moved into on March 2nd, about a week before the pandemic really broke. And so in that sense, we were more well prepared for this than we've ever been by having that capacity in place just in time to be able to absorb the massive growth in volume that we've been able to achieve in the subsequent months. So like everybody, we weren't prepared, but in another sense, we did some good things that had us prepared for something that would be a shock to the economic system. And luckily, we had that in place before the pandemic really took hold.
So Kyle, since the pandemic has taken hold, and I would say it's that middle of March timeframe when it all shut down overnight, as you said, you know, what has the impact been to the organization from a funding perspective since then and from a supply chain perspective? Obviously, food shortages in some locations, but any other kind of results from an organizational perspective?
Yeah, so it has been just sort of breathtaking to see kind of how overnight the scale of our activity has just shifted totally. And so first, just on the financial side, you know, the food bank enjoys broad-based support from literally tens of thousands of donors prior to this. And that broad-based donor base has responded extraordinarily to this extraordinary event. The financial support we've received has allowed us to really respond with great confidence and very aggressively to the needs in our community. And we are well positioned financially because of that response to sustain our elevated level of activity for many months to come. That's been very important because on the other side, operationally, the initial month was really challenging from a food supply point of view. As many of you will recall, there was a run on grocery stores as people began to anticipate a shutdown. And so people were wiping out the shelves of grocery stores who are big donors to the food bank. And that impacted us in two ways. Number one, the inventory they would normally give us was just not available anymore. And it at the time, it accounted for nearly a third of our total inventory. Number two, because the grocery stores then had to buy a lot of product to get in stock for this much higher level of demand in their stores, it put a massive downstream impact, or I guess upstream impact, on the overall supply chain. And so the availability of product kind of end to end on the supply chain was just much tighter than it had been, certainly in my experience at the food bank. That made it really hard for us to get enough food into our system to meet a huge surge in demand. We were buying a lot of product and are continuing to buy a lot of product, you know, four or five times the amount of product we would normally buy. We're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars a week right now to buy product. We've also been able to, starting in April and May, really source a lot more of the perishable products that were destined for restaurants and other food service businesses that were stranded in fields and other producers, and get that product and put it to work here in our local community. That's allowed us to meet more of the demand. I mean, we're distributing more produce and dairy than we've ever distributed. And then there have been a big influx of federal commodities that the federal government, through the various stimulus bills, have made available to food banks. And so now we are distributing more than 2 million pounds of food a week.
Wow.
In June, the month of June. I should say in April and May, we distributed about 8 million pounds of food in each of those 2 months. That compares to a typical month of about 6 million pounds of food. In June, we distributed 10 million pounds of food. And so our run rate just keeps going up. And as I said, June, you know, represents an increase of like 70% over what we did in the month of June last year. So it's been a huge growth. It's been enabled by the support of the community. And I'm just really overwhelmingly proud of how our team has been able to respond.
So how do you feel like this has, you know, pushed the organization towards advancing your mission? You talked about the mission and how it doesn't talk about supply chain or trucks or even food, but, you know, how does a pandemic like this and the demand that comes with that, how does that help you advance your mission and also in meeting what the community needs?
What I would say in response to that question is our growth in distribution certainly is a great thing, and we're feeding more people more food than we ever have. However, to think critically about this, what the pandemic has shown us is some underlying vulnerabilities in the community. It's highlighted the kind of disparities in outcomes that were already there among certain communities who were disproportionately experiencing food insecurity before the pandemic and are now experiencing food insecurity even more intensively with greater disparity after the pandemic. So it's exposed some of those inequities and disparities. And it's exposed some vulnerabilities in our own network, in our own system. There are certain parts of our region that we serve less well that we've got to build capacity around. And so I think what the pandemic's going to allow us to do, having really kind of pulled back the rock on some of that underlying weakness and opportunity to get better, is it's going to allow us to really think strategically on the investments we need to make to help serve those communities, like communities of color, immigrant communities, communities with high concentrations of low-income families, to serve them better in the future than we ever have.
It's good to hear, Kyle.
Like what you hear so far? Make sure you never miss a show by clicking the subscribe button now. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Now back to the show.
So Megan, let's bring this back to the nonprofit industry as a whole. You work with a lot of organizations. How does the Atlanta Food Bank situation compare to others in the industry?
It's very similar to what many other nonprofits are experiencing. At the beginning of the quarantine time, we were seeing a lot of positive affecting nonprofits. So a lot of people were making donations that don't normally make donations at this time of year, or they were jumping in to help and volunteer and what can we do to benefit the community. But what we're seeing now is a lot of donor fatigue. We're also seeing a lot of virtual fatigue. The April, March, May timeframes is a huge time for nonprofits to hold fundraising events, so that you might have galas or other golfing events. And this is a big time for fundraising. And we're seeing a lot of those be postponed so they can be live later or change to a virtual format. And we're seeing a lot of experiences through other nonprofits where that virtual format is where it was at the beginning of the pandemic. Really, everybody was on top of it. They loved doing a Zoom call. They loved being part of that experience. We had a nonprofit the other night who hosted a virtual event that 29 people joined the virtual event. And this is an event that they normally host around 200 to 300 people. So they raised a quarter of what they normally would have raised. And so we're kind of seeing that, and we're seeing nonprofits think through, what else can we do to raise those funds? How else can we revitalize this and make it through? We've seen a lot of furloughs. And it just, that means for a nonprofit that they've got to rely on their volunteers. And so they're relying a lot on their board of directors to jump in and help, and their committee members to jump in and help, whereas they would have typically relied on an employee. So these are very similar stories to what the food bank has experienced. And thankfully, it sounds like the food bank has been successful in continuing to help the community. And everybody's is thinking outside the box right now to keep furthering their mission.
So Megan, that's a good point. And Kyle, I would ask you, you know, how do you feel like the food bank has adapted? You know, what pivots have you done to try to adapt to, you know, this new way of doing things, whether that's from the way that you actually do business, so you would work with your employees, or the way that you would interact with your donors from a fundraising perspective?
I think we've had to adapt and be opportunistic and reactive in a couple different ways. First, on just the operational side, there's been a lot of adaptation we've gone through just to modify our operations given the safety issues that we're operating in. So we're not using volunteers inside our building right now, even though we normally use 30,000 volunteers a year. That's a big shift. We had the National Guard with us, still do. They're leaving soon. But they've helped replace some of that volunteer capacity. And what they haven't been able to replace, we've had to change our sort of production model to simplify it so we could deal with the loss of volunteer support. We've managed our sort of outbound delivery and pickup slots differently to minimize kind of congestion at our docks. Got people teleworking very aggressively. Our partners are now distributing food through drive-through distributions rather than by having people come inside to collect food in the building in the pantries. And all of that has helped us operate safely. You know, we've been able to maintain business continuity. In other ways, I think we've been really creative and opportunistic in our marketing and fundraising efforts, recognizing that, you know, the food bank and other sort of direct service providers were going to be at the top of people's lists right now for support. And so our marketing efforts were very timely, and I had a lot of support from our various media partners to help us get our message out. That's helped us raise a lot of money. And then on the back end, we've just executed, I think, very well in how we have operationalized those fundraising campaigns. And then the last thing I would lift up is, you know, I think one thing that people want in a crisis like this from a funder side is they want to know that you've got kind of a strategy, you know, that you are looking out 6-12 months that and have a sense of how the contour of that demand curve is going to work. And you've got a plan for how you're going to increase capacity to meet higher levels of demand, that plan is based in prior experience, that you have existing infrastructure in place that allows you to execute the plan, that you've got the right partnerships in place already to execute the plan. And so I think we did a good job at leveraging our existing capacity and relationships, putting against it a really good plan for how we wanted to go forward that was aggressive and bold, and that inspired a lot of financial support from institutional donors. We do think it's going to get tighter in the months to come, as Megan was talking about. I think the fourth quarter is going to be really rough for nonprofits generally. I think there's at least a coin flip chance that we'll see a tough kind of stock market environment, which will drive some fundraising results. And that environment is going to be related to the election. It's going to be related to a potential second wave. You know, so we're preparing ourselves for a tough fourth quarter in terms of fundraising. We're not going to be able to do the special events that we would normally do, but we feel well prepared given the success we've had already.
So it sounds like you've learned a few lessons. Any advice or encouragement for the other nonprofits out there that maybe are a little bit more in the boat like Megan talked about, and any other encouragement you can give them?
Well, look, you know, I've got a lot of colleagues in the nonprofit sector, and many of them are dealing with a very different set of circumstances than we are. You know, this is kind of the food bank's time, right? And the community knows that, and they've been very generous in supporting us. You know, it's a lot harder for other organizations that are not engaged in the same type of activities that we are to stay relevant right now. And so I think, number one, those organizations have to be really clear-headed and make tough decisions about cost containment right now, and think long-term about their sustainability. I think they have to think opportunistically about, you know, how they can be relevant in the current environment. Who can they partner to? What value can they add to the efforts that are really critical right now to a long-term recovery? I think they don't, in that spirit, want to start doing things that they don't have expertise in or capacity to execute just because they're trying to get some short-term funding. But, you know, and then the most important thing for any nonprofit in any circumstance is engaging in great stewardship. And that's particularly true in a crisis, right? To talk to your key donors, to inform them of your plans, to be honest and transparent about where you are. You know, that stewardship, there's no substitute for it. I'm on the board of the Goodwill of North Georgia organization. And like other retailers, Goodwill had to close its stores, which are a huge source of revenue. I think Keith Parker and the team over there have done an amazing job at recognizing, hey, this is going to be a massive financial hit for us. They did everything they could to contain it, to communicate transparently with the board, with their supporters. And they are still not out of the woods, but I think some of their clear-headedness around decision-making early on has made it more likely that they can survive and ultimately thrive than if they had kind of been less quick and decisive in the way they acted.
So Megan, you know, hearing Kyle and share how the food bank has responded, lessons they've learned, what insights do you feel like other organizations, and I would say for-profit and not-for-profit, can glean from their story?
I echo a lot of what Kyle said. It's about leveraging your relationships. From a donor perspective, every nonprofit has their top donors or their typical donors or even their sponsors, and really calling on them and telling them your story. like Kyle said, that stewardship can't be replaced, and explaining to them the need and where you are at this time really helps them to remain engaged and ensures a revenue stream for the nonprofit. Also, leveraging relationships in terms of volunteers. Every organization's having to make hard decisions right now when it comes to employees, and the PPP loan has been very beneficial for most companies and even nonprofits, but a lot of nonprofits were not able to take advantage of that loan as they were considered a larger business. And so there wasn't a ton out there under the CARES Act for those larger nonprofits. So they are having to make difficult decisions in terms of employees. And if that's the case, making sure that they do leverage their relationships with their board members, with their committee members. A lot of people have more time on their hands right now, and they're still generous in terms of their time, even if they cannot be as generous in terms of their finances. They could volunteer to go and get silent auction items or to take care of supply chain demands, and they can. It's making sure that you've got people to take up the slack for the employees you might be lacking at this time, whether it's through furlough or through termination. And making sure, you know, that Kyle said the food bank, this is their time. It is. You know, everybody is very concerned about their fellow man right now and taking care of those who need food. And it's so eye-opening to know that your neighbor down the street that you never would have suspected is in need of food and just general sustainable items to live.
Megan, those are some really good points. So Kyle, let's think about 5 years from now. And I know that's a difficult thing because 5 years ago, we probably wouldn't have been talking about this. How does this whole situation influence your story, or how does it change your nonprofit or I would say all nonprofits?
Oh man, that's a great question. You know, I think the thing that the pandemic has just really shine a light on are two things, and they connect to each other. So the first is around the idea of resiliency. For me as a leader of a nonprofit, it's made me, you know, want to look much more critically than I ever have at our kind of business continuity and business resiliency as an organization. You know, just the ability to operate in really challenging environments, I think is likely to be needed more, not less, in the years to come. You know, it may not be a pandemic next time, but we're going to have additional kind of tough challenges to deal with in the years to come. And we've got to have great kind of business continuity, disaster response kind of plans in place to be able to operate. And similarly, as a community, we've got to have a much more expansive view of what resiliency means in our community. I think a mega trend that we've kind of gone through over the last 30 to 40 years has been this move to just-in-time inventory and, you know, and sort of really maximizing productivity at all costs and minimizing kind of slack in the system. And that's true in terms of supply chains. It's true in terms of government programs. When you don't have that kind of cushion in place, you know, it's great when you don't need it. But when you need it, it's a real problem. You know, it's kind of like an insurance policy.
Good point.
And so I think our community, the people in our community, a huge percentage of people in our community are living with very little slack in their budgets, in their financial lives. Individual cities and counties don't have that kind of cushion and rainy day kind of resource fund to deal with shocks to the system. You know, we don't have a safety net that is well-equipped necessarily. It's okay. It's okay, but it could be a lot more well-equipped. You know, our healthcare system, you know, all of those things don't have the kind of cushion in them that we don't want to pay for when we don't need it. But man, when we do need it, we sure wish we had paid for it. So I think that resiliency thing at the organizational level and at the community level is really important. And then the other thing that I think that's going to come out of this that is related to the pandemic, but even more so to the recent deaths of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery and Rayshard Brooks, is the issue of equity. you know, the communities of color have just unacceptably been facing greater consequences of economic shocks, of economic disruptions, of healthcare challenges. And we together as a community have to just agree that those disparities are unacceptable, they're unjust, and they've got to change. And so I think our organization is going to be about that too.
Yeah, I love that you kind of ended with that, Kyle. And, you know, that is something that our organization, and it's interesting because we had a firm meeting in January of this year, and the main theme of that meeting was on being an inclusive and diverse organization. And, you know, our industry has forever not been that. And so we made a, you know, concerted effort to prioritize that. And so it's just very interesting to see how this year has pushed us towards that, to really, you know, face in the mirror, are we doing that? And, you know, I think, you know, what did our organization, you know, come out of this is making sure that we keep that a priority, and that we are putting action, you know, where our words are. So I echo what you said. And so, Megan, you know, before we wrap it up here, just as in closing, kind of what advice would you give to organizations, you know, as they think about the future and they think about what they've learned out of this crisis, you know, what should they consider when they're making future plans for their organizations?
I would really encourage all nonprofits to be prepared. As Kyle said earlier, we never saw this coming. You know, in a million years did we expect to be in the middle of a pandemic in 2020, but we always need to be prepared for anything. And so this is a time for nonprofits to meet with your board and talk about a contingency plan. We plan for strategic planning all the time. There needs to be a strategic plan in place for nonprofits as well, to make sure that we are prepared for something else to happen, for a financial crisis, or how to operate under a time where revenue may not be as plentiful. Another thing is to meet with your board about cost analysis. When we come back from this, what does that look like? Can we operate on a lower level of employees? Can we operate on a lower level of revenue? What cost can we cut? Could we work from home? Could we cut our rent? So there's different costs that could be cut, and that would require just an analysis in general on between your accounting department and your board. So that's a time for us to do that. And how to come back stronger. Coming back from this, we're going to learn a lot of lessons and what our community needs. And so nonprofits are typically the ones who meet those community needs where there are gaps in between in the system. And so how to capitalize on that and to fulfill your mission by meeting the gap. And I encourage all nonprofits also to take advantage of government funding. Just yesterday, the government announced that they would be extending the PPP loan application period to August the 8th. There's still $130 billion of unspent loans out there. So those smaller nonprofits with less than 500 employees can go out and apply for those loans. And many nonprofits don't know or don't understand that they are also qualified to take advantage of that loan program. And if you already have gotten the loan or you can't take advantage of that loan program, make sure to go out and take advantage of the government grants that are out there. I would tell everyone to go to grants.gov. That's where the Department of Treasury puts all of the grant information, grant applications, and other information for applying for grants. And that's a great way to get a little extra funding where needed during this time. And meet with your accountants and legal team, and how do we keep everything financially tight and ready to come back from this without losing our momentum in our mission.
So Kyle, here on the wrap, we'd like to wrap it up in 60 seconds. What is it you want our listeners to leave with from this conversation?
You know, I think where I would leave it, Paul, is that we've just lived through and are continuing to live through just a totally unprecedented crisis. What is allowing us to get through this crisis is partnership and collaboration. What's allowing us to get through this crisis is investment in capacity in our organizations and in our communities and in families. And that there's a tremendous opportunity for us to learn from this crisis and find ways to create greater resiliency in our communities, in our organizations, in families, so that when crisis inevitably hits, we can respond and react and recover a lot more quickly.
Kyle, thank you so much for taking time. I know that you have been working a lot, and I know that this is a busy time for you, and I really appreciate you taking time to talk with us. I think, you know, our listeners, there's definitely things they can learn from this conversation, whether they lead a nonprofit or lead a, you know, for-profit organization. And that's what we were hoping that this conversation would do. So thank you so much, and send our best wishes to your team at the food bank. And we hope that you stay safe, and we appreciate all that you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Thanks, Kyle. Thanks, Megan. Always good to talk to you. Missed seeing you around the office.
I know, me too.
Bye, guys.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you. We'll see you.
And that's a wrap. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave a review on your streaming platform. To check out more episodes, subscribe to our podcast series, or make a suggestion for other topics to cover, visit us at warrenaverett.com/thewrap.